Hello, welcome back to Clinician's Brief Partner Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Beth Mollison, and I'm so excited about today's topic as we're going to talk about something that we encounter a lot of in general practice, the food elimination trial. And even more exciting, we have Dr. Ashley Bourgeois with us, or some of you may know her from social media, the Derm Vet. Today's conversation is only possible thanks to our sponsor, Royal Canin. So, Dr. Bourgeois, welcome to the podcast. And if you wouldn't mind, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I always love doing podcasts just as a busy mom of two, trying to get as much little, you know, education that I can. I listen to lots of veterinary podcasts because it makes it so easy. So I'm so happy to be here. You know, I was someone who loved veterinary medicine from a very young age. I grew up as a daughter of an Air Force pilot. So we moved around quite a bit. But my family is originally from Minnesota. I went to high school, was just around the Twin Cities. And then I went to Iowa State for undergrad and got a degree in animal science. Ended up going to the University of Missouri for vet school, which is where my dad was stationed at the time, and loved it. Just really enjoyed my time in Columbia. And then I knew I wanted to do dermatology very early. I think that was kind of weird about me, was that my first year I fell in love with it. I didn't go into school thinking that's what I wanted to do, but I just loved the science and the communication with clients that regarded the skin, and just really love the topic of it for some reason. And so I went to do my small animal rotating internship at Purdue University, and then was very, very lucky to have landed my dermatology residency with Animal Dermatology Clinic in Tustin, California. And I stayed on there for a little bit after I took my boards and got boarded. And then I am still with the same company, but up in their Portland, Oregon location now, where I have just learned to love the Pacific Northwest. So here I am, and just really enjoy educating about dermatology management. I know it's something that general practitioners do a ton of. And so, you know, everything with the Derm Vet came out of the passion of knowing you guys are so, so busy and have to know so, so much, that I really just love doing things that make your job easier, but in a way that's easy to fit into your life. So this is what I love to do, and I'm just so happy to be here.
Wonderful. We love that, Dr. Bourgeois. I have to laugh. I've always loved dermatology too, and I decided to sneak in an extra rotation right before I graduated in the derm clinic. And I wound up with, I think, what was maybe the first and last ever derm inpatient that I wound up getting stuck for like an extra week. It had an abscess. It was a cat with an abscessed internal ear infection. So I learned my lesson there.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it was a good learning experience. But anyway, again, thank you so much for coming and for your willingness to share your expertise when it comes to all things derm. And of course, today, we're going to be talking about the food elimination trial. So I wanted to start by discussing what might be the most critical step, and that is, how do we know when to start a food elimination trial? You know, I feel like I always run into those instances as a general practitioner where maybe you have a pet that comes in itchy and you notice in its record you were also dispensing an antipruritic a few months ago and now they're back again. How do we know when it's time to pull the trigger? What are the signs of adverse food reactions? What should we be looking for? And what are the indications for actually starting that trial?
It's such a great question, but it's also like a very difficult question because honestly, nothing in dermatology is really that straightforward. And any itchy pet honestly can benefit from a diet trial because food allergy is really sneaky. It likes to appear with other allergies. So you can have dogs who are solely food allergic and cats that are solely food allergic. But what's tough is a lot of times they concurrently have, say, flea allergy or, you know, atopy. So that's what's difficult. So I actually never think it's wrong to do a diet trial because of that fact. But there are cases where I really, really look at certain indications and say it is imperative you do a diet trial, because there are some cases where I'll, you know, well, you were seasonal, we can just kind of go with atopy. And there's some where I'm like, we have to do a diet trial before I even will consider that your dog has atopy. So for me, the indications where I really think it's necessary are pets that are really young. So say like a dog who started having otitis or pruritus or pyoderma at a very young age, like under a year, because we can see young pets develop food allergies. On the flip side, older pets. So pets who develop allergic pruritus when they're over 7 years of age. So we never had signs of pruritus. We never had signs of, you know, chronic allergic skin disease. And all of a sudden we are 9 and we are very itchy. Now, what's tricky about that is there are things that are not allergies that can cause older dogs to be itchy too. So cutaneous lymphoma, pemphigus, like all these other things can actually cause pets to be itchy. But let's say we know, we've ruled those things out and we know this dog is allergic. And if they didn't start those signs until they're older, those are the situations age-wise I would definitely do a diet trial. So kind of bimodal distribution, super young or older. If they've always been non-seasonal, so since they started having pruritus from the get-go, they've just never had seasonality to it, we definitely want to rule out something like a food allergy. And then I think the most obvious one is if there's concurrent gastrointestinal signs. And that's not just, oh, you have diarrhea. Like that can be vomiting, diarrhea, chronic soft stools. There's studies that show if they have more than 3 bowel movements a day, that that's abnormal. So if you have a dog comes in and they have, you know, 7 bowel movements a day, that's abnormal. If they have lots of Borborygmus, if they have lots of flatulence. So you kind of have to get in depth with those GI signs. I think what is really important to recognize is that a lot of food allergic patients, dog or cat, don't have GI signs. So sometimes people say, oh, well, their stools are normal, so they can't be food allergic. Not true. In fact, you know, most cases of food allergy actually won't have those gastrointestinal signs. But if they do, then I definitely want to rule out something like a food allergy.
Okay, this is great. I'm already learning a lot. So now that we have those tips on when to consider a food trial, but of course, I know as someone who has the conversation many times with owners, not everyone is ready to jump on board and say, you know, sign me up for that food. We get a lot of how much is that food? Can we try X, Y, or Z first? Oh, can I still give rawhides with that food? And not only that, but sometimes there are even barriers to the veterinarian wanting to suggest or going ahead and suggesting a food trial to an owner. Do you mind to share with us some of the most common hurdles to starting a food trial that, at least in your experience and what you see, what are those and what tips do you have for overcoming some of those challenges?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a very common hesitation for owners, even in our practice as a specialty practice. I think it's always important when we are going to really sensitive topics. So for me, the sensitive topics are food and ectoparasite control, if they don't think there should be ectoparasite control, right? Like those are the things where it's just like, oh, like we all shudder when we have to think about having those conversations. And I'm the same way. But what I always remind myself is, it's important for me to be on the offensive, not the defensive. You know, if I go in and say there's an intake form that's been filled out and it's already like, you know, we feed a raw diet or we've already tried all these diets over the counter, all these things, it's easy to want to, even as a doctor, put your guard up and say, oh, this is just going to be a terrible conversation. I like to be offensive first. So for me, I know food is an emotional subject for people, right? Like it seems silly. Oh, it's just food. But it's a way that we show affection to our pets. I mean, it's just like what I feed my kids. Like it's what I have chosen to show affection. It's what I have chosen to be nurturing. So when all of a sudden you go in and start suggesting the food could be the culprit and causing all of those symptoms that their pet's having, it can actually have owners feel guilty and they become very guarded, like they did something wrong. But I feed the most high quality food. It can't be that. So I like to start the conversation when I know I'm going to be discussing food allergy, a food elimination trial. I'll just say, hey, I know food can be a sensitive subject and you're going to get a lot of different opinions about food, you know, whether it's different veterinarians, online sources, you know, Facebook groups, like there's nutrition's everywhere. So I like to say, I would love to tell you my thoughts about food allergies and my thoughts on what a true diet trial means to me. But in the end, we're going to do whatever you feel comfortable with. And personally, for me, I have found that approach shows owners that they have the ultimate choice of what we're going to do. And it makes them a little bit less guarded, takes their shield down a bit. And they will receive the information, even if they don't elect to do it. Like I have people I cannot convince to do a diet trial as well, but I find them more open and not just guarded the whole time. So it's just like, hey, you know, we're going to do whatever you feel good about. I just want to go through, you've come here. I want to go through what I think is going to give us some answers for you, but there's an out. And I just find that even the tough conversations are not as tough. I also make sure they understand that food elimination trial, that's a diagnostic test. I ask owners to give me 8 weeks. So we're going to change the food. We talk about the different options for food. And then at the end of 8 weeks, we're going to challenge. And to me, that challenge is answering yes or no, they're food allergic. And the diet and the pet is they're going to be food allergic, and we can identify the triggers. I also tell owners, food is great because it's controllable, right? If we get through a whole food trial and it's not that, the environment's not very controllable. We can control food to some degree. It can be harder in some dogs, but we can control it. So we kind of talk about the acceptable options that we feel comfortable with long-term at that point, but let's just get through these 8 weeks. I think owners often kind of go into us talking about a diet trial and they're automatically like, oh, you're going to put me on super expensive food and you just want to sell me the super expensive food for the rest of my pet's life. I just say, give me 8 weeks. Give me 8 weeks, diagnostic test. We'll get through it. We'll pick a food you feel good about. Let me tell you what I like using. At the end of 8 weeks, if we are not better, we can't, you know, we challenge, nothing happens, we're not food allergic, cool. Like, we can come off and really talk about feeding whatever food you feel good about, even if we are food allergic. But say there's hesitation over what we're feeding long term, cool. We know they're food allergic. We can, at that time, discuss other options. So most of the time, if I can get owners to commit to the 8 weeks and they do well on the diet, at that end of the 8 weeks, they'll just continue that diet. But I think giving owners that comfort knowing that we're going to do whatever they feel good about takes some of those guards down. At least that's what I have found.
I love that. I love giving them an out, and I love the idea of approaching it like a diagnostic test. But okay, so say you get everybody on board, the vet team, the owners, everybody's on board and wants to try the 8 weeks. What diet do you select, or what do you look for in a diet when you're ready to start that trial?
Oh, the ultimate question. Which diet do we choose? And it's hard, right? Because I have my favorites, and we'll certainly talk about that. But I am open to certain things. Like, I love hydrolyzed diets, but there are some owners that just really, for some reason, don't feel comfortable that want to do novel protein. We've also had to deal with backorder issues with, you know, our crazy world. So it really kind of depends on the veterinarian and the owner. And so I will always go through a few different options personally. We'll discuss what hydrolyzed is, novel protein. We'll talk about why using a prescription diet, like, you know, Royal Canin diets are really important because of the difference, because of the cleaning they do and the testing they do to assure there's no other protein sources in that food. That's really important for owners to understand why it's more expensive, because they do that testing. So we can feel comfortable after those 8 weeks that we have ruled in or out a food allergy, and then we can go from there. So I think in order to be successful in getting people to do a diet trial, you have to take the time to get their diet history. Do they need something like a canned option? Like, do they have to have a canned option and it's not going to happen, to give medications, mix in with kibble? But, you know, I do have some owners that are like, you know, this is all our favorites as veterinarians, right? Like, whatever you recommend, I trust you. It's like my favorite thing to hear. Like, I'll do whatever you say. we're always like so excited. Some owners are shocked. Like, well, whatever you recommend. I'm like, you don't understand. That doesn't happen.
Sometimes it makes it harder. I know. You're like,
yeah. Like, I have the choice. Oh, this is fabulous. So we get that too. But I prefer hydrolyzed. I just think, you know, given my choice, having the extra step of having that diet broken down, the protein broken down very small, we can see better digestion, less allergenicity. And so I do, like, if I have my choice, I do prefer hydrolyzed options. And I really do enjoy Royal Canin Ultimito. And to me, it is, you know, one of the gold standards because it is that ultra hydrolyzed diet. You know, there are studies showing chicken allergic dogs, which is a very common protein, don't flare to it. I've had dogs and cats where they've done multiple diet trials. I am very convinced there has to be food. And that's the hard thing, right? Some dogs and cats need multiple diet trials, and that's really tough. But I've had some where I'm like, oh, like either they have GI signs or something's not fitting. And I just feel like there has to be a food component we have not identified. And I've had some where I'm like, hey, you know, let's do the ultra hydrolyzed diet. Let's do Ultimito. And I've had some respond to that diet and none other. So, you know, given my choice, I do like hydrolyzed. And because of the ultra hydrolyzed smaller protein source of being so small and Ultimino, it is one of my recommended diets.
Wonderful. So now that we have the vet team owner on board, got our food choice, as far as the trial itself, sometimes I think that knowing what not to do is even important than knowing kind of those textbook steps that are laid out for you. What challenges do you see crop up during a food elimination trial? I know I often get calls like, oh, my dog ate a bowl of the cat's food 2 weeks into the trial, or hey, my dog is really itchy. I think we need to give it steroids. Do you mind to give us some pointers on once you've got that food trial going, these things crop up, how do you salvage these food trials? What are the most common things you see, and any advice you can give to us general practitioners?
Yeah, I mean, it's even tough for us. You know, we feel like we do a great job communicating. My technicians, my assistants, client service representatives, they're so good at going through the discharge and making sure owners understand what strict means. And we feel like we do it all. And then we still get ones that come in for the recheck and they're like, I gave it just with a little bit of chicken, that medication. And we're like, no. So you just have to do your best to prep your owner. But inevitably life happens and we all have to work through that. So, you know, I say that as a dog owner, and I did a diet trial when I adopted a dog almost 2 years ago. And at the time I had a 1- and a 3-year-old at home. And guess what? It was super tough. And I'm a dermatologist and this is what I do for a living. I mean, my dog quickly learned that being underneath my 1-year-old's high chair was the place to be. So communication is key. And what I will say is you have to make sure it's the right time for a diet trial. That's first. So like I recently had an owner who was going to be traveling for a couple weeks. You know, they were going to go on an RV trip and bring their dog with. And they knew there was no way that they were going to be strict. There's just no way they're going to visit all their friends. It wasn't going to happen. You know, maybe it's December 17th and we know holidays are coming around. Like, is that the right time to start a diet trial on that dog if grandma and grandpa are going to come over? And there's just no way they are going to be strict. Some owners are like, oh no, we'll be strict. Cool, we can start it. But you really have to make sure, first of all, that's the right time. I would rather wait a month or two to start a diet trial if I have them controlled with what therapies we need to control them with, then waste that time not gaining information. So that's first off, is just make sure it's the right time. You know, if we need to wait because vacation or holidays or whatever, life's coming, we have visitors coming to visit, just put it off. Like, make sure it's at a time that the owner can do it. And then the communication's essential. So you have to say it, your staff has to say it, your discharge instructions have to say it, have handouts, because I know we're all short on time. They have to know, like, even the smallest amount of food, owners always think it's just a tiny piece of hot dog that compromises the diet trial. So do they need things to give pills in? You know, do they need things to chew on? Then give them alternatives, you know, Kongs, things that are not going to be flavored. We don't want to find out they gave raw hides the entire time during the diet trial. If there's multiple pets in the household, especially if they're all the same species, like there's 3 dogs at home, you know, put all the pets on that food. If there's no other comorbidities in the other pets we have to worry about, then put them all in that food. And it may be more expensive, but if we can be confident we're going to be strict for those 8 weeks, that's going to save them a lot of frustration and money in the long run. I also think what's really important is you mentioned, you know, itch, and say they're like itchy at the beginning of a diet trial. Do not be afraid to use antipyretics to make them comfortable while we're doing the diet trial. Historically, we'd often just start the diet trial, maybe treat infection and say, okay, I'll see you in 8 weeks. But what happens? A week or two later, you get that panic phone call of they're tearing themselves apart. I can't do this for 8 weeks. So I will put them on antipyretics, you know, whatever medication that makes sense for that pet. And I let the owners know, like, we're going to make them comfortable. You know, they deserve to be comfortable. I don't want them to get things like infection. I want them to feel good while we're doing this. But in the end, we're going to try to withdraw that therapy and then we can do the challenge. And that's how we're going to get the answer, because owners will always say, well, how am I going to know what's working? You know, for me, I can eventually challenge that pet food. I can get them off that medication. But when you talk about 8 weeks, that's a long time. And for them to be uncomfortable, to be licking and chewing, to becoming secondarily infected, we're going to end up with an owner who's not going to want to do a diet trial and a pet who's very miserable and risking things like secondary infections. You can always take the anti-itch meds away. That is what the challenge is there for. So do not be afraid to make these pets comfortable and just be outright with the owner. Hey, yeah, I expect if they're better in 2 days, it's probably the medication I gave, not the food, but we will work our way into knowing that. But I want your pet to feel good as we're doing it.
All great advice. I love that. I like to even tell people, I compare it to a peanut allergy in humans. I'm like, you know, you can't get close to them. And I know it is so hard as the owner of a one-year-old child. I could relate. we could never pull it off in my house right now. So I think all those are great considerations. And like, say they do get a bowl of the cat food, do you just take a few weeks off and reset, or what are those parameters for slip-ups?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think one that's very different depending on the situation. Because like if it's right in the beginning, who cares? Like you can kind of just reset. You know, if they got to the 6 week mark or 7 week mark and say they're not on other medications and they got into the food and didn't flare, like maybe you were probably okay. So those ones I feel like are pretty gray as far as situations and what we do. One thing to feed off of your peanut allergy, because I use the same thing. I think people can really relate to peanut allergy, especially if they know kids who have it. I say the same thing for why prescription diets are so important. So there are certain children who even have to watch out for a label on something that says this was made in a facility that also contains peanuts. That's kind of how I explain why prescription diets are important. Like they do the testing, they have the cleaning protocols that assure there's not other residues in that food. That doesn't make over-the-counter diets bad, but from a diagnostic standpoint, we don't have that reassurance of that extra testing, very similar to if a child ate something that was made in the same factory as peanuts. So using those types of situations to explain, because people always think of themselves, right? Like humans, like what have we dealt with? They can relate to that a bit easier.
All great advice. Thanks to Rural Canin for making this month's podcast possible. An adverse food reaction could be hiding beneath allergic dermatitis signs. Recommend a food elimination trial for skin issues with nutritional support from Altamino to see what's really going on. Detect, protect, and connect with Royal Canin. Okay, so we made it through the food elimination trial. Now, how do we interpret these findings when the pet comes in at the end of the 8 weeks or whatever the case may be? How do we decide where to go from there?
Yeah, an ideal situation, you know, if I had them on antipyretics, we would have discontinued those. And the symptoms are being controlled with food alone. So like, say they're on, you know, Apoquil, we get to the end, we stop it, they're fine. That would be our ideal situation. You don't see the clinical signs coming back that previously bothered the pet when they were on the other food. So the ear infections, head shaking, pruritus, licking, chewing, whatever it was for that pet doesn't come back. But what I'll say, what's tricky is, again, a lot of food allergic pets like to have other forms of allergies, like a dog who has atopic dermatitis and adverse food reaction. So sometimes they'll stop the antipyretic, they'll have some of their pruritus come back or some of their signs, but they're way less severe. And I would still move forward with trying to challenge the diet. So we give a little bit of that food back, see if they respond, see if they react to it. But an ideal situation, their symptoms would be gone, just on the food, no other medication, and then we would move forward with challenging it.
So you touched on challenging it, but if you'll expand on that, and then are there benefits to keeping a pet on a derm support diet? And what is that? What are the details of that conversation? What does the conversation look like when you are discussing that with an owner?
Yeah, and that's always the nice thing, right? Because we've gotten past those 8 weeks. So hopefully we've gained the owner's trust either way, like whether they responded to food or not. But this is where the re-challenge is super, super important. Some people reach the end of that time and say, I'm just going to stick with the food. And that's great. Well, I'll talk about why that's important. But I still think the re-challenge, if owners can do it, is really important, because that's where we get the diagnosis. 8 weeks is a long time. We could have shifted seasons during that time. So what I have the owners do is save a small amount of the old diet that the pet was on when the symptoms were present. And then what we're going to do is take a small amount of that food and then mix it in to the dietary diet. So say Altamino. We did a diet trial with Altamino. We mix a small amount of what they were on previously with each meal. Usually you'll see those clinical signs return within a few days, at least in my experience. You know, again, pruritus, head shaking, inflammation, scooting, GI signs, whatever it was for them. But I do have owners do it up to a week. just to be easy and monitor any late onset, things like that. The hard thing is sometimes owners just think, oh, we made it to the end of the diet trial. I'm just going to put a little bit of chicken in the food and that's going to be my challenge. But what if that's not what they were allergic to? Like, it's important to use old food because whatever they were allergic to, that first challenge for me is just answering yes or no as a clinician. Like, are they food allergic? Yes or no. Is the food contributing to some portion of the allergic signs? Yes or no. From there, say they are, we can always dive in into all of the individual ingredient challenges they want. I have some owners who get really into it. Like, we will do like 10 things, but you have to do it in a methodical way. So for me, first challenge is yes or no. So have them save some of the old food where we know they were having clinical signs. If they put flares with that challenge, then owners, like I said, we can either look into other options, but oftentimes they will elect to stay on that food because they've seen how good they can do. So maybe they stay on something like Royal Cane Ultimito long term. And there's other benefits besides just they absorb it well. Some dogs with the ultra hydrolyzed, you know, it can help things like their stools a lot faster. If they were having soft stools, it was controlling their symptoms well. But there's other really good benefits and ingredients in these derm diets for their skin. So like Ultimino, they have benefits for skin barrier in the food. There's increased fiber, things that can really help manage them long term. And as we're learning more and more about skin barrier function, it is really important. That's why we're all, the dermatologists are so obsessed about things like bathing. Well, it's wonderful to also be able to control and help not only their primary food allergic signs from not happening because you're not feeding them what's triggering them, but also having those other benefits of the skin support in that food, because we have to feed them anyway. If we can really support their skin and lessen things like infections, and, you know, say you have a dog that concurrently has atopy, by restoring that skin barrier, you're minimizing things like penetration of allergens. So from a long-term standpoint, it can be super beneficial from all of those reasons to properly support their skin beyond just not feeding them what they're allergic to food-wise.
Wonderful. So much good advice in there. Makes me almost excited to start a food elimination trial.
Almost. I got to get you there.
Almost. Yeah. No, a lot of good advice. I think I learned a lot, and I really like your emphasis on the client communication. That seems to be a lot of times where the make or break happens. And yeah. So that brings me to our Keep It Brief segment. So Dr. Bourgeois, while we have you here, I wanted to pick your brain on one more thing. As a specialist, of course, you see a lot of referrals from cases that have been worked up with their GP. Is there one thing from the referral cases you see that you think, oh, I wish general practitioners had done X. I wish they'd done this differently. I wish they knew X, Y, or Z. Anything that would either make your life easier as a specialist who's getting these referral cases or make our lives easier as a practitioner trying to handle these in general practice?
Skin is so complicated. Like, my mind, it seems so simple, right? Because we're dealing with things that most of the time are not life-threatening. But I think what's tough about dermatology is there are so many different layers to it, right? Like, there's topical therapy, there's the diet, there's the antipyretic, there's the ectoparasite control. Like, there's infection management, there's ears, there's skin. Like, there's so much stuff. And that makes it hard. You know, my mind wants to go to cytology, everything. And truly, truly, like, I do believe that, like, cytology is important. Doing good diet trials is important. But if I could pick my one thing I wish that was done before I had cases referred to me, and this will be very geographically dependent, but at least where I am in the Pacific Northwest, I would want any dog or cat who's like sent to me to already have been on consistent, good, quality ectoparasite control with an isoxazoline, hands down, because it's always really difficult, you know, to see those cases, wait a couple months to see us, and then be really suspicious that most of it's due to something like a flea allergy or an ectoparasite that's easily controlled by isoxazolines. So for me, at least in my wish, every pet would come in on really good, consistent ectoparasite control. So then we could jump into other stuff like the diet trials or managing environmental allergies.
Wonderful. I love that tip. It's nice and simple, or at least simple on paper, maybe in practice, getting compliance. But no, I love that. And reminded me that it is my dog is due for his flea prevention. So thank you for saying that, flea and tick prevention. So on that note, thank you so much, Dr. Bourgeois, for making us excited about implementing more food elimination trials and hopefully more successful food elimination trials in practice. And of course, thank you so much to our sponsor, Royal Canin, for making this conversation possible. Thanks again to our sponsor and to today's guest for joining us, and thanks to you all for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. We would appreciate if you leave us all the stars. You can also listen to podcasts on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. And you can also drop us a line at podcasts@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief Partner Podcast is a Brief Media production.